Well, hello, listener. Welcome to yet another episode of the Zeitgeist Tapes, in which Emma Burnell, hello, Emma.
Hiya.
And myself, Steve Fielding, discuss politics and culture. Often films, often TV shows, sometimes plays, and in this particular instance, a one-man show, which both Emma and myself have seen separately, Marlon Solomon's one-man show, A Lizard's Tale. So we thought it would be a good idea, and Marlon was very amenable, and frankly, we're very grateful for this, to come and just talk about his one-man show, to see, you know, why he did it, maybe what some of the results have been, some of the reactions. And so hello, Marlon.
Hello, thanks for having me on.
Yes, and I should probably tell the listener that due to technical issues, Marlon and I are very, very close facially because we're sharing an earphone, and so we meant to try and impress him with our, you know, facility, and here we are.
I've just had a cheese and an onion Greg's pasty on the way. Had I have known I'd been that close to you, I would have reconsidered.
Well, there are some advantages for having hay fever, so I'm not getting any.
Good.
Good. Excellent. So Emma, when did you see Marlon?
I saw Marlon, first of all, 2 years ago, was it, Marlon? In Edinburgh, when it was a very small show above a pub for about 45 minutes?
Yeah, something like that.
And then I saw him again about 2 weeks ago, when it was a much, much bigger show above a pub, but still a much bigger show. And God, you know, two halves, a good couple of hours.
Yeah, including the interval. Yeah, it's about that, I'm afraid.
Yeah, so it's it has evolved since I first saw it.
Yeah, well, it has, because stuff keeps happening.
Sadly, yeah.
So I keep having to add more bits on.
So, Marlon, do you want to just talk us through what the show is all about?
The show is called Conspiracy Theory: A Lizard's Tale. It's about my journey through the conspiracy underworld. I'm of Jewish descent. Well, I am Jewish. And I started to notice some really alarming rhetoric a few years ago, conspiracy theories, replicating old anti-Semitic ideas and tropes, just in my kind of local area and in my peer group. So I started investigating it and kind of starting to feel more Jewish along the way, because I'm not practicing and I don't live in the Jewish community. And yeah, the show tells the story of what I found and how prevalent some of these awful ideas are.
I mean, it's very autobiographical, and so I just wondered why did you find yourself ending up doing this? Because it's not exactly uncontroversial. I mean, there are easier, maybe more audience friendly things to do. So why is Marlon Solomon doing this show?
Because I had to learn and understand anti-Semitism and its relationship to conspiracy theory to understand what I was seeing, so I can do the show from the point of view of somebody who is learning about it in an attempt to engage with the audience so that they can come on that journey with me. Because one of the big problems about, it's a lot of stuff about anti-Semitism in the news at the moment. It's an issue in mainstream society now. And a lot of the problem is that people don't understand what it is. So this show is just, you know, and it's, I try and put a bit of humor in. I don't know how successful I am with it, but it's an attempt to try and explain to people what this problem is, what this prejudice is about. And what are the signs and the markers to look out for, and also as a plea for Jews to be treated like any other racialized minority, and their, you know, prejudice be kind of respected in the same way other prejudices are. And that's, I'm obviously specifically directing this to the left.
Yeah, I mean, when I've told people, I mean, having seen it, my local ward Labour Party sort of used it as a fundraiser, and yeah, you know, it was packed out church. That's quite a rare thing. And when I describe it to people and urge them, say, you really should see this, it is entertaining. I mean, it's almost, you feel slightly guilty. You actually do deal with an extremely sensitive, difficult and tragic subject and bring in humour. So but it almost seems wrong to describe it as an entertaining thing, because it is much more than that.
Well, the anti-Semitism is an irrational, ridiculous superstition. I mean, a lot of my show focuses on David Icke, who believes that the world is run by trans-dimensional lizards. But when you have a look at a photograph of the lizards or a picture on his website of an image of the lizards, you'll notice that they wear Star of David's. And that's quite funny. You know, as horrifying as it may be, when you look at how he's developed these ideas, and he's got some of his ideas from the bowels of kind of Nazi-era anti-Semitic doctrine. It's funny to see a guy who believes the world is run by Jewish lizards. There's no way of making that not funny. I mean, a lot of the stuff that's funny in the show isn't funny because of what I say. I just let the anti-Semites do the work for me.
Yeah. I mean, when there's that bit, because I knew he was nuts, and I knew there was an anti-Semitic aspect to the thing when he talks about lizards, but I didn't realise how anti-Semitic he was, and also how clever he is to kind of hide it, because he refers to Jews as Rothschild Zionists, doesn't he? And I didn't realise he was using that as a technique. But when you have in the show, you've edited him constantly saying Rothschild Zionists, Rothschild Zionists. I mean, it's horrible, and yet it's also funny. But I just think I didn't know this. This is actually something I didn't quite appreciate.
So I did kind of know it because I'd read John Ronson's book from several years ago, Them. But I think the way that he deals with it is kind of anthropological, whereas when you're bringing the humour to it, and then that, as Steve says, that bit where you edit it and he's just repeating it over and over again, I think in some ways it's quite a stronger, more in-your-face way of presenting it.
There's also an added aspect. You're right to say that, but there's an added aspect with John Ronson in that I was in touch with him recently, or he was in touch with me, because that was 20 years ago, that documentary and book, Them. David Icke's moved on. He's added a lot more anti-Semitism to his repertoire. Like everything else in our society, things have got more extreme. And when I'd written a few blogs and the campaign, against David Icke to raise awareness of what he was, preaching Nazi-era anti-Semitism in sold-out arenas in Britain without one anti-racist protester outside, it was really alarming to me. So I started campaigning. Then it kind of gained momentum, and it went. It was talked about in the press a bit. David Icke stopped being this crazy lizard fella who went on Wogan and said he was the son of God, and people started talking about him as this guy who promotes Holocaust in Ireland, this anti-Semite, and which was the whole idea. And John Ronson started getting a bit of abuse on Twitter because he didn't give him a pass, but the main takeaway from that documentary was his documentary then was that, when he says lizards, he means lizards, not Jews, which at the time was kind of true. But then he got really clever, David Icke. Well, I said clever, a few years later, he strapped on a lot of kind of contemporary anti-Zionism onto his oeuvre to shroud the anti-Semitism, thus opening up his market to a lot of kind of socially conscious liberal lefties who were kind of, and disguised it all in pro-Palestinianism, which is really dangerous and, a great insult to the pro-Palestinian movement who, a lot of them. And that's what I try and untangle in the show. I show how stuff like that is legitimate and the bits where it becomes illegitimate. And I use David Icke as an example in his show of how he does that. So, yeah, John Ronson had to tweet out and go, yeah, David Icke's a lot more extreme than he was when I did that documentary 20 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that in many ways, that kind of development of his persona and his market, as you say, is mirrored in a lot of what we're seeing culturally. And politically, unfortunately, particularly in the Labour Party. And we've dealt with the anti-Semitism question before in another way. We covered denial. But the fact that you are getting so much work, Marlon, is not good, if you'll forgive me for saying.
Yeah, I guess. I guess it is. It just happens to be in the zeitgeist. So, yeah. It's not doing me... it's not doing my psychological state any favours, but yeah, it's necessary. This problem needs addressing and it needs talking about.
Absolutely.
I mean, the thing about the David Icke thing is I was just staggered that he was getting these venues. I mean, that they were allowing him to do that. And as you pointed out, not getting anyone protesting outside, because it was slam dunk anti-Semitism. I mean, it's hard to avoid that conclusion when it's put to you. I mean, you put it very well in your show. But what kind of an audience are you getting? What kind of audience are you getting? Because I went to a Labour Party fundraiser in lovely little Chilton Ward in South Manchester, trendy South Manchester. And so are you going, is it primarily Labour, local Labour parties? I mean, how are you, what kind of audiences are you presenting the one-man show to?
I've been invited to a few Labour groups to do it and a few places. I did it in Parliament. I'm now officially part of the conspiracy. Yeah, I did it in Parliament. I get invited to all sorts of weird places to do it, like the Labour conference. I did it a couple of times. I do it in, I might book a theatre. I did it for the Holocaust Education Trust. And I did it for some sceptic societies. It's a perfect audience. And mostly the audience are on my side, but not always.
I was going to ask you about reactions, because I was in the infamous one where somebody's relationship broke up because they were having an argument.
So funny.
It's tragic. It's going to happen anyway. Surely it was going to happen. You were just a catalyst. But they were having an argument about what you were saying, and there was clearly a disagreement, and then that relationship ended. I mean, that must be the most dramatic kind of reaction. But for the most part, the audience was very receptive. I when there were questions at the end, I detected there was an undercurrent, but it wasn't articulated. But have things been articulated in a more straightforward way in terms of opposition and criticism?
Occasionally. I mean, it's very difficult. If you're a committed conspiracy theorist, I'm just, you know, trampling on your worldview in front of you for an hour and a half or whatever. And it's not particularly nice. And occasionally people do get very angry. It's not happened many times, but I did. There was one guy who lost his rag right at the end of the show when I say that the truth is not relative. You know, the 9/11 was not a false flag. The earth is not flat. And at that point, he was all red faced. He went, "Yes, it is."
What, that the earth is flat?
Yeah, the earth is not flat. That was his tipping point.
Wow. What a hill to die on.
I mean, if you think the earth is flat and someone's saying it's not, you're going to be really annoyed about it, I guess.
I've never understood the attraction of the flat earth theory. Like, what does it give a person?
The flat earth theory, I don't know that much about it, but I've
studied... You're doing one-man show?
Yeah, we've taken to a weird place already.
It's not that very far from what David Icke believes, and I wouldn't be very surprised if David Icke also believed in flat earth, although he doesn't explicitly say it. He does believe that the moon is a hollowed-out space station, and that's where we're being controlled from, that's been tethered here. That's quite a common belief. Essentially, when you get to super conspiracism, which is when you go past kind of earthbound conspirators, when there's this group of usually like this distant supernatural force that's controlling all the earthbound conspirators, controlling all the events here, you get to a stage where we're living in the Matrix, and these conspiracy theorists quote the Matrix all the time.
Yeah.
I read one of David Icke's books. It's on every other bloody page, the Matrix, you know, take the red pill, take the blue. And also notice the alt-right also use that red pill, blue pill stuff as well.
Men's rights in particular.
There's a crossover. Yeah, exactly. There's a crossover with that. So if you believe that we're living in the Matrix, this is all a simulation and we're being controlled. So it doesn't really matter what shape the Earth is. Everything is a simulation. It could be completely flat. And that then, so there is no difference between what Flat Earth believes and what David Icke believes. It's not... it's not a kind of super rare belief to think this. You know, David Icke sells out the Apollo in Manchester.
Well, I know that is the scariest thing about it. And I know that the show's gone for like 7 hours, don't they?
12.
Flipping heck. Well, I suppose you get your money's worth, but bloody hell. Do you get a toilet break?
Starts at 10:30 in the morning.
Crumbs.
Well, I hope it's well catered.
I can understand falling down a slightly conspiratorial rabbit hole. I've been there. I think there was a time when I didn't believe Oswald acted alone and all of that. I probably thought that Princess Di's death was a bit sus at one point.
Yeah.
But what is shocking me these days is that I kind of grew out of that. I'm 20 years older and hopefully 20 years wiser. But I talk to complete strangers now and they will tell me the most fanciful things that they believe, as if everyone believes these things. And it just shocks me, not just that people are so conspiratorial, I think we all have that nature in us to an extent, but that people are so open about it.
I mean, it's not a new thing though. This is as old as time itself. We've always believed, it's just part of who we are. We're all conspiracy theorists in one way or another. Mm. There is clearly a rise of conspiracism in mainstream politics, for sure, as politics has become more polarised recently and left and right have gone out to the extremes a bit more, for sure. But in terms of how many people believe conspiracy theories and how many don't, I don't think there's that much difference. One book I read recently about the psychology of conspiracy theories thinks it's just pretty much always been the same. There's always been the same amount of people who've been committed conspiracy theorists, roughly there or thereabouts, even though sometimes it does, and I totally share that, Emma, it does seem.
Maybe I'm just hanging out in the wrong places.
Yeah. I would say that it's more accurate to say at the moment conspiracy theorists feel emboldened by the political climate.
Yeah, I think that's,
and I guess
that's
Twitter
fair.
helps make links between these people and give some validation that they might not have had they just been that odd person on the top of the bus.
Absolutely.
Talking to themselves, perhaps. But so you're, the first half of your show really, very vividly sort of talks about conspiracy theories in general, doesn't it? It kind of sets the scene for the second half. Which is mostly about the Labour Party, isn't it? And certainly for my audience, or the audience that I was in, I was waiting for things to kick off a little bit. But and that must be the most difficult part of that, because you're a Labour Party member.
Yes.
And there are people in the Labour Party who today seem to share a conspiratorial view of politics in general.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, since around about 2015, what seemed to be an almost unconscionable, it just doesn't seem to make sense, really, that the Labour Party became a site of anti-Semitism, something it should never be, according to its own philosophy and its own sense of itself. So I just wonder, how do you approach that in your show? How do you explain how important is it in terms of the wider Labour Party politics and what's been going on more recently since 2015?
I think it's really important. I just tell people my story. It takes me 45 minutes to explain what anti-Semitism is and contemporary anti-Semitism. It's a complex prejudice. It was complex for me to understand it. I had to learn to understand it because I didn't understand where all this stuff was coming from. This started in April 2016 after Livingston had started ranting on about Hitler, that Hitler supported Zionism. And there was a lot of my peer group on just say my Facebook feed who'd newly politicized people who'd been previously disenfranchised with politics had joined the Labour Party. And just unthinkingly, reflexively defending anybody who was being criticised, who was part of the new Labour movement. And when Ken Livingston said what he said, all of a sudden there was, and I'm the only Jewish person on my Facebook feed, you know, I work in theatre, I work in the arts, it's very, very left. And I've always felt very at home now. All of a sudden, there's Holocaust revision on my Facebook feed. There's people putting links to far-right websites to prove Livingstone's point. There's people who've never, ever posted about Jews or anti-Semitism before suddenly telling me what's what about anti-Jewish racism. And it was awful. And I know some of this stuff was you know, Nazi-strength anti-Semitism. And I could watch people go further and further down the rabbit hole with nobody to object apart from me. And when I started to object, and I've never been involved in, at that time, I'd never been involved in Middle Eastern politics. I'd never been involved in the Israel-Palestine debate. It's not, I'd always stayed clear. And yeah, I was thrust into it. I was being made to answer for it. And I was like, this isn't fair. And so, yeah, it took a couple of months to watch some of these guys on my feeds get to a point whereby they were being very open with anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, culminating in, I think, a couple of them posting this thing about blaming the Zionists and the Jews for the Nice terror attacks. And that was a big wake-up call for me, just to watch people go down a rabbit hole. It took them like 2.5 months. So I show that I explain that in the show that I do, how they went down the rabbit hole, where it ended up, and then other experiences. Because after I've done the show, people have written to me telling me their experiences, Jews and non-Jews, about experiences of anti-Semitism in the Labour Party, and I show some pretty horrifying stuff. And I think there was some kind of undercurrent a bit when I did it for Chawton Labour Group, but it's very difficult because I try and expose people to some pretty egregious examples of anti-Semitism, and you can't help but be disgusted by it. So I didn't feel much of a negative reaction at all, even from people who may have been more prone to denying or obfuscating for the issue, which is the major problem, I think.
I mean, one of the main results, excuse me, one of the main results of your show was that the ward accepted or put forward a proposal that we affiliate with the Jewish Labour Movement, and then ultimately that was put to other wards, and the constituency is now affiliated to the Jewish Labour Movement. But there were some voices, and it was quite the GC voted quite overwhelmingly, but there were some voices against it. Not that they were there for your one-man show. So I just wondered, those people that don't really think there's a problem. I mean, clearly you believe there's a problem. You've identified what that problem is. But what do you say to those people who say, well, it's only 0.whatever% of Labour members anyway, and the Labour Party is less anti-Semitic than other parts of society. Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you respond? This is all an overreaction.
It's a really good question. I mean, it's an attempt to, whether sincere or insincere, to reduce a cultural problem, because that's what anti-Semitism in the Labour Party is, on the left and the wider left. It's a cultural problem, and it's an attempt to reduce it to a decimal point, to say that, well, we've got so many members in the Labour Party, we've got 600,000, of course, you know, there's going to be anti-Semites in, you know. But when 3 Holocaust deniers were standing for Labour at the last local elections, why are they not asking the question, what is attracting these people to the Labour Party with these beliefs, rather than trying to dismiss it as, well, you know, as if we've just left the back door open and some anti-Semites have just wandered in. It just doesn't work like that. It's a cultural problem. If you look at the blogs, if you look at the new left media sites, the pro-Corbyn ones, they're throwing, in my opinion, they're throwing everything at Jews that the worst aspects of our right-wing press and tabloids are throwing at Muslims and immigrants. There isn't much of a difference. Jews are being scapegoated in the pages of these things. The denial and the conspiracy theory that's surrounding the denialism of anti-Semitism is there to see if you just read all the blogs that are saying this. There's a whole industry dedicated to denying this problem. So, and it's not being dealt with because, in my opinion, the leadership of the Labour Party is completely complicit in this. There's also other things as well. New technology plays a huge part in this. Nobody really knows how you know, the scale of the problem, but I would say it's pretty large. I mean, I've looked into some of the Facebook forums, and it's terrifying, some of the things I show you in the show. Yeah, there's some of the things that Rachel Shabby, who's broadly supportive of the Corbyn movement herself, has said, that some of these pro-Corbyn Facebook forums are being used as basically anti-Semitic grooming schools. Any dissent, there's no dissent tolerated in them, and people are being stuck in these echo chambers where these views, and there's some very anti-Semitic stuff in there, is just being reinforced, and there's nobody there to argue that, you know, this is wrong, this is anti-Semitic. That just creates a feedback loop, because the only news source that is trusted in these forums and on in this online community are these new lefty media outlets, and not all of them, but, you know, a good portion of them, that deny the problem. So you have a feedback loop, and feedback loops just get louder.
No, absolutely. And I mean, I think the Labour Party in general and the left of the Labour Party were very, very, very slow to even accept that there is a problem, and slower still to take any action. I'm not sure we have seen proper action on the most part yet. But I know that you have been working with that part of the party too. Am I right in thinking you've been doing some work with Momentum?
Well, Momentum came to watch the show. Some staff in Momentum came to watch the show. They were really taken with the David Icke stuff. And there's some staff there who really recognise the problem. And like, can we do a protest with you, David Icke? So, yeah, absolutely. So we did. Some people in JLM and Momentum, we did a David Icke protest. They promoted it heavily. They made a video about him. More than I could have asked for. You know, I'll work with anybody to
absolutely
to try and make inroads into this problem. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are sceptical about it, but you know, there are very I do put several caveats in the show. You know, I've got good mates who are faithful Corbynistas. They're just as disgusted by the anti-Semitism as I am. I'm not tarring an entire political movement with the same everybody involved in this political movement with the same brush. Of course I'm not. It's huge. And you know, there are some people in Momentum who've done some really good stuff recently on anti-Semitism that I'm wholly supportive of.
No, absolutely. I mean, I've had you know, problems in my branch. I'm not Jewish. Although, Steve, you thought I was Jewish for a long time, didn't you?
I did. You were culturally Jewish, I think.
I am. I mean, I grew up in Stamford Hill and I always feed you, so.
Oh, did you?
But my local branch has, you know, just had some really, really nasty motions come through. And the motion itself was pretty bad. But there was also circulated with this sort of supporting statement stuff, and it was just out and out conspiracism. And it was the most disgusting thing I've ever been sent by the Labour Party. And I've been a member of the Labour Party for a really long time, and you know, it made the racist mugs look positively benign. But
wow,
what is so striking to me is this sense, because I'm on the left of the Labour Party, I'm just not a racist, you know. And it's just, why do the two have to go together?
I mean, it's quite handy being on the left and not, you know, it's, you know, it's what you'd kind of expect, isn't
my
it?
My USP, right?
It's so funny that you have to say that.
Yeah. And just shocks me so much to hear some of the stuff that's said. And I just think, well, you know, what the hell has that got to do with a better economy that works for everybody? So what's next for you?
I'm going back to Edinburgh.
Oh, are you? You're in Edinburgh again this year? Presumably in a bigger venue than the last one I saw you in.
Slightly bigger than what was a glorified living room, yeah. I'm doing it just the Tonic at the Crypt. And yeah, it's not a big venue. It's big enough for me, I think. So yeah, I'm going back to Edinburgh to do that. And it's obviously, when you saw the show at Edinburgh, it was in its kind of embryonic stage. So it'll be a bit better by then. Well, I've said a bit better. It'll be a bit, I will have done it more times.
And is it the same full length show that Steve and I both saw recently? Or is it truncated for Edinburgh?
Truncated, just an hour.
I mean, basically everything in Edinburgh is just an hour, unless you're train spotting live, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I can only do an hour. I did do, actually, I went to Edinburgh once and did a show that was an hour and 20 minutes. But that was, yeah, apparently that was very rare. And we had to be on at midday. And we were all naked.
I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, we'll pass over that. So do you think there'll ever be a time when you won't feel it necessary to do a lizard's tail, that your work, or at least the work of others as well, might have been done? Can you see that far ahead?
I think, look, this isn't, the anti-Semitism problem is not, didn't just start in 2015 with the rise of Corbynism. This has been percolating away in the radical fringe left for quite some time. Places like the Occupy movement and People's Assembly and things like that, there has been a subculture of anti-Semitism, and it has thundered into the mainstream now. And it's not going anywhere for a long time. I think this is a generational fight now. I think, sorry to be sound so pessimistic, but I think the genie is out of the box. And when, it's going to be, I think that it's going to be a long time before we see this receding from society. I do. I'm sorry I can't say anything more optimistic. Okay. Well, but I might get more work out of it.
Well, on that bombshell.
That's amazing.
on that bum note, that bombshell. Well, thank you, Marla, for sharing your thoughts and good luck with the show. Its future iterations.
Do you want to plug your dates at Edinburgh one more time, Marlon?
It's on every day, apart from the 12th of August, and it's on at 5:20 p.m. every day at the Crypt with just the Tonic.
Fantastic. There you go. Well, if I make it up again, I will come and see you again.
Yeah, I'll do you. That'll be three times.
I should
pay you to do that.
You should get me handing out flyers. I'm very good at flyering.
Oh, great! Yeah.
Right. Well, that's a wrap for this month's podcast. It's so thanks again to Marlon and to Emma and to myself, of course. So, listener, if you wouldn't mind rating and reviewing. What on whatever platform you happen to be listening to this podcast on, we'd be very grateful. I should thank Lord Stuart Wood for doing the theme tune. And this has been a Political Cumin production.